Today, October 11th, 2020, is National Coming Out Day. National Coming Out Day was originally founded 32 years ago on the anniversary of the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights in a very different political and cultural climate than the one we're living in today. It may seem like coming out as lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, or transgender is less of a big deal now than it was back then, and maybe part of that is true. I hope so. And maybe someday people won't have to come out at all because we'll all be free. I hope for that too. But until then, decades after the founding of today's National Day, coming out is still something that queer people have to do all the time. And like it was then, it's still difficult, powerful, brave, and something to celebrate. So today, let us celebrate. Let us honor once again the deep truth that the personal is political and the incredible power that coming out can have in a world that presumes heteronormativity. As one of the founders of National Coming Out Day, Robert Eichberg, said 30 years ago, most people think they don't know anyone gay or lesbian, and in fact, everybody does. It is imperative that we come out and let people know who we are and disabuse them of their fears and stereotypes. It was true then for gays and lesbians, and it is still true today for the wider queer community. According to the Human Rights Campaign, today, one out of every two Americans has someone close to them who is gay or lesbian. But for transgender people, that number is only one in 10. Coming out still matters in 2020. It still makes a difference in the community, creates more visibility, and brings more people to support equal rights under the law. And perhaps more importantly, it still frees the one coming out from shame and isolation and allows them to live more fully into the truth of who they are. And I believe it still gives the holy, the spirit of life, the great mystery, universal love, that which I affectionately call God, reason to smile and rejoice. I know I've told my rather dull coming out story from this pulpit before. I had few of the negative experiences that I know are all too common to most LGBTQ people. After all, I grew up in an open and welcoming UU church. I went through About Your Sexuality, the sex ed precursor to our OWL, or Our Whole Lives, program that we offer here at People's. I had liberal parents who had gay and lesbian friends. And I myself had plenty of gay, bisexual, and lesbian friends as a teenager and young adult. So coming out to my faith community, my family, and my friends was not really the problem for me. But coming out to myself was. Despite the fact that I had grown up in an accepting and affirming environment, I too had nevertheless internalized the homophobia present in our wider culture. Other people in my life may have had no problem telling me they loved me and accepted me as I was growing into my full self. But I struggled to do the same. Sometimes I still do. This is a spiritual issue for me. For despite the fact that I had so many supportive human beings telling me they loved me in my life, what I really longed to hear was the voice of God telling me that I am okay, that I am loved. As a young person, I didn't pray or meditate. I had very little concept of the holy and not much instruction on the matter. So by the time I was grown and interested in developing a spiritual practice, I found myself paralyzed with fear. I didn't know what to do or what to say. I desperately wanted to communicate with the divine and get to know that which I now call God, but I was convinced I was missing something and would get it all wrong. I felt I needed instruction. I needed to get it right. I needed to know exactly what to say. Apparently once, so did Dan Rather. Years ago, he interviewed Mother Teresa on CBS and famously asked her what she said in her prayers. She answered, "I listen." Well then, Rather pressed her, "What does God say?" Mother Teresa smiled and gently said, "He listens." Rather looked perplexed, and a long, uncomfortable silence followed until Mother Teresa finally added, "And if you can't understand that, I cannot explain it to you." You see, I am Dan Rather in this story. I don't understand how God communicates. I am constantly struggling to simply listen to the voice of the Holy, rather than to all of the other voices in my head and in my heart. We live in a loud world. We all have so many voices rattling around inside of us, telling us we're not good enough, or smart enough, or tall enough, or pretty enough, or straight enough, or strong enough, or whatever it is. But if God is the one who listens, none of those voices are the voices of the Holy. The divine doesn't shame or belittle. The great mystery vibrates beyond words. The Holy listens. Universal love communicates through silence. And so we must quiet all the other voices, including our own, to hear it speak. Mother Teresa says, "Listen in silence, because if your heart is full of other things, you cannot hear the voice of God. But when you have listened to the voice of God in the stillness of your heart, then your heart is filled with God." I don't claim to be particularly good at this. I certainly wasn't even mediocre at it until recently. For the longest time, I remained filled with noise. But about 10 years ago, in my first semester of seminary school, I learned something that helped me a lot. I learned the spiritual practice of Lectio Divina. And I know some of you engage this spiritual practice as well. For those of you who don't know, Lectio Divina means divine reading. It is an ancient Christian practice of praying the scriptures. It is active, which really works for me, and contemplative, which is a little harder for me. It involves cycles of reading, reflection, responding, and rest, going through the sacred text, any sacred text, multiple times through this pattern. Specifically, the text is read out loud and immediately followed by a period of silent reflection or rumination. And then when you're ready, you can respond to the text in spontaneous prayer, for example, or in discussion with others if you're with other people. And this is followed by a period of rest. Then the process is repeated: reading, reflecting, responding, rest, again and again, as many times as you want or as many times as feels necessary. Each time you go through the process, you might bring a different lens to the topic. You might bring a different question to it. For example, what feeling comes up for me? What word or phrase stands out for me? What memories does it evoke? What words of comfort or challenge does it bring to my life? And there are many other frames to bring to this practice. Learning Lectio Divina was a gift. I've not mastered it, but it is slowly teaching me how to listen. It is working on me and inviting me to be still. Every time I practice it, it allows me to stop trying so hard to say the right things or anything at all, really, and simply hear, simply listen, and hear the voice of the Holy cutting through all that noise of daily life. As Mother Teresa says, in the silence of the heart, God speaks. If you face God in prayer and silence, God will speak to you. Then you will know that you are nothing. It is only when you realize your nothingness, your emptiness, that God can fill you with God's self. Souls of prayer are souls of great silence. No doubt there are countless other ways beyond the one I've described to tune into the still small voice. The still small voice of that which is both within and beyond the self. Earlier this week, during our How to Survive the Next 28 Days Before the Election community conversation that we had, we discussed some of them, remember? We talked about things like going outside into nature, going for walks in the woods, gardening, meditation, these things that fill us and restore our souls, things like yoga and art, music, and so much more. And we're all encouraged and encouraging to one another to lean into some of these practices as things in our nation are especially divisive right now. There are many ways to open the ears of the heart and connect with the pulse of ultimate reality. But something I wanted to share with you today, which was brought to my attention by a colleague of mine, the Reverend Scott Taylor, who pointed out to me recently that each time you engage in these spiritual practices of listening, each time you practice Lectio Divina or whatever it is that works for you, if you stick with it long enough, listen long enough and deeply enough, you will eventually hear the same thing every time. That you are beloved. That God loves you, calls you beloved, and knows your name. Or as Henry Nouwen once said, the real work of prayer is to become silent and listen to the voice that says good things about me. Why is it so important that you are with God and God alone on the mountaintop, Nouwen asks? It's important because it's the place in which you can listen to the voice of the one who calls you beloved. To pray is to listen to the one who calls you my beloved daughter, my beloved son, my beloved child. To pray is to let that voice speak to the center of your being, to your guts, and to let that voice resound in your whole being. No matter who you are, who you love, what kind of body you have, what you believe or don't believe, God knows you as beloved. The voice of the sacred invites you to love yourself too and come home to yourself in your own skin right here and now, just as you are. And is also doing so in the heart of everyone else, your neighbor, your kin, your friend, and your enemy. Yes, I know this is where universalism gets difficult, but as universalists, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of all people. We affirm that all are beloved, that there is nothing that can separate us from anyone else or from the love of God. Let me say that again. There is nothing that can separate us or anyone else from the love of God. Discovering this has been life-saving for me. And for anyone else out there who needs to hear it, please know that you are beloved, that you and your gender identity and your sexuality are pleasing and blessed in the eyes of the great mystery. And for those of you who are cisgender and heterosexual, please know the same. And please know that we need you to keep fighting for us, your queer friends and family. Just this week, I felt the bottom fall out all over again when I learned that two justices of the Supreme Court had issued a statement against the court's 2015 same-sex marriage decision. Apparently, they think that my ability to file taxes jointly with my spouse and co-parent somehow inhibits other people's religious liberty. I don't understand that. My spouse and I are just trying to live our lives and protect and provide for our family and our daughter the best we can, just as anyone else is. And I don't think we're trying to inhibit anyone's religious liberty in doing so. So yes, I have gotten to a point where my internalized homophobia is no longer so much a spiritual concern for me, but it is still a cultural concern. We still have a lot of negative messaging out there and reasons to be afraid and reasons to be upset. there is still shame and anger for a lot of queer folks. I couldn't help but feel it this week as my rights and the well-being of my family and so many people I love were once again being discussed in the court of public opinion and in the highest court of the land. And so we listen. We listen in the silence. We remember that we are loved. We reflect, we rest, and we respond. Knowing that we are beautiful and blessed, we act. As our siblings in liberation theology teach us, we act. We must always follow our deep reflections with meaningful action. We must keep working to build a more just and equitable society where queer rights are human rights. And I know a lot of you have done so much work on this already across your lifetime. Thank you for playing your part in this. Thank you for being on this journey and siding with love every time, over and over again, as long as is necessary. Thank you. May we build a better world. May we side with love. Amen, and blessed be.